Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, "Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Dulce, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Panthola, Amphibola, Amagilla. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, down to Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Dallas, Crystal Clear, Rock, Black Rock, Black
Rock. It's time for the next edition of the River King Jumbo Justice radio show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice radio show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you so much, Audrey. Once again, we're on the air with Blog Talk Radio, and the show is Jumbo Justice Radio. I hope you're prepared for an interesting show tonight. We're back from Seattle last week, and we came back to a little bit of rain, but we're used to it after spending 3 or 4 days in Seattle. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash. And you notice that Johnny did stop by Washington in that song. He didn't say Seattle specifically, but he has been to Washington. Now, Audrey, I want to thank you and Mike and Emily for joining us. And, Mike, I hope your shoes have dried out. You shouldn't wear $300 shoes to Seattle. They're bound to get wet and take a while to certainly dry out. Well, tonight, folks, we have a very special treat, and I think our guests are coming online already, but we're going to study illegal immigration tonight from the perspective of the co-founders of Citizens for Legal Communities. And our guests tonight is going to be Judy Lehman, and then William Barnhill, who has a very excruciating, heart-wrenching story to tell. But I think the story is also inspirational when you hear what these folks have done to bounce back from something that's been a tragedy in their particular community. The purpose of our show is to discuss news issues, events, and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And our show is dedicated to those tireless, never-stopping police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and, indeed, the world. We're coming to you on Blog Talk Radio. If you had a chance to look around the Blog Talk Radio site at www.blogtalkradio.com, you can see that there are literally hundreds of shows there. And Alan Levy is the CEO of Blog Talk Radio, and now he has literally hundreds and hundreds of shows under probably 25 or 30 different genres. And this is a genius technology, and it allows any person, interest group, or organization to broadcast a show in streaming audio worldwide on the Internet to an unlimited number of listeners, and it's totally free. You don't have to pay a penny for it. Isn't that fascinating? Think about that. Anybody can have their own radio show. And the shows are immediately archived within 5 to 10 minutes, where you can come and listen to those to those shows, or you can download it to a CD or to an MP3 player, whatever you choose. And if you don't like this show, there are hundreds of others to choose from, and I'm fond of saying, just like on the back of the Cheez-Its box, get your own show. Okay, we were in Seattle last week. It was a very interesting stay. Let me comment on that just for a moment. I did happen to see in Seattle the more homeless people than I've seen in a long time, and I must admit that some of them were very, very clever. I was panhandled in about 40 seconds by four different guys at the same intersection, and I love what one of these guys said. He comes up to me with a sign, and he says hello. Then he holds up his sign, and then he's got a little drink cup in the other hand and jingles some money, and the sign says, I ain't lying, I need a drink. I thought that was right on the money. And then almost immediately another guy comes up. He's about my age, about 106 years old, and he holds up a little sign, and it says, my mom's in college, would you help? I thought that was good. It wasn't seconds later I walked across the street, and another guy was doing the three-ball exchange. He was a juggler, and I happened to drop, I think, a couple quarters in his cup because I appreciated his talent. And I mentioned on the show last week when we broadcast from Seattle that it's the first hotel room I've ever been in that furnished an umbrella, and boy did we need it. It rained literally every day. But it was an interesting stay, and this was the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences meeting, or literally hundreds and hundreds of papers presented there on every subject imaginable. And you can go to acjs.org on the Internet and go to the 2007 program schedule, and you can go through the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday schedule and see papers written about everything that you could possibly imagine in the field of police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice and in criminology. So we had a great time there. I think what I'm going to do tonight is suspend our news here for a moment and get our guests online and see if they would like to just go forward and tell something about their story. Hold on just a second. Hello, is this Judy?
Hey, how are you?
Just fine. Good to hear from you tonight. And how's everything down Warren County way?
A little wet,
is it? Okay. We're used to that. So, listen, very pleased that you could come on tonight. And what we usually do is start off with a little news here and there, and I comment on that. If you'd like to join in, maybe I could reel off a couple of these news stories and see what you think. Have you ever heard of anyone being arrested for DUI 28 times?
No, but I know of someone that was arrested for DUI 18 times.
I know one in Texas that was arrested 14th time, and unfortunately the 14th time he killed a police officer that was on duty that was out directing traffic, a Fort Worth officer. Well, this guy in Albuquerque, he pulls up in the driveway in his pickup truck, opens the door and falls out into the driveway, and the Albuquerque police were there to catch him. But this man has had 27 prior DUI offenses, 14 convictions. He spent 4.5 years in prisons and jails, and he was still out driving, of course, without a license. I might point out that case in Texas, the guy actually still had a legal license after doing a couple of years in prison. But isn't that incredible? Is that the record down Warren County?
Actually, pretty much so. We have a fellow here in Warren County that had 18 DUIs, and he did go to prison. I think he went for 3 or 4 years, and when he got out, he was picked up for driving with no license and just got out of jail. He spent a year. Hopefully not going to be behind the wheel again, but, you know, who's to say? I mean, how can that be? How can anyone watch someone 24/7 to make sure they're not going to drive?
Exactly, and I don't think the orange or yellow license plate is worth that much, actually. I mean, I see them all over the place.
Waste of money.
And now we're going to try it for sex offenders. What do you think about that idea?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know how it is in your area, but I have noticed probably I work here at Warren County, And I've noticed in our criminal justice system, we have, seems like, more sex offenders probably in the last 2 to 3 years. I've noticed that more than anything here in our area in Warren County. I mean, it's just amazing. We get people coming in almost daily for sexual crimes.
Incredible. And some of these national websites that allow you to type in a zip code or an address and get to see who your friends and neighbors are interesting, aren't they? That's a little frightening.
The website is called watchdog.com. That's a really good one. And you can get on and see where actually there is a sexual offender living close to you.
I have noticed some that I meet in Kroger's.
They're everywhere, and they're people that look just like me or you. It's really scary. We had one in Warren County just here that was just sentenced. It was his girlfriend's grandson. They duct taped the little boy to, I guess he wet his pants, and they duct taped him to the toilet. It was pretty bad.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Really. Here's another story, and then I think we probably ought to get to your organization and what it's doing, the fine work that it's doing. There's a story out of Iowa where the man gets out of the penitentiary, and if you don't have any type of ID card for the reentry process to get bank accounts and any type of credit or whatever you're doing, you need some type of ID. So the prison system actually issues you an ID, a state ID. So this guy gets out, and he decides to perform another burglary, the same crime for which he was in the prison system. He gets out and knocks off this burglary and steals $400 out of a jug that some woman had in her apartment. And then he gets home. He's feeling real good. He's $400 to the good, and whoops, the cops show up. And guess what he forgot at the crime scene?
Oh, don't tell me. His ID?
The state corrections ID card, so we know those things are valuable, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely incredible. Well,
it is.
Well, Judy, tell us a little bit how you got involved with your Citizens for Legal Communities. You're a fairly new organization. What? Is it several months or half a year?
This actually got started probably about the 1st of September in 2006. And I have Mr. Barnhill with me.
Okay. Oh, great.
Well, and I have, and his wife Barbara and my husband Larry. We're kind of like I feel like we're the workers in our group. But anyway, I guess you know we've all talked from time to time, you know, about how our borders aren't secure and never really think it's going to hit home, you know, until you know, someone in your neighborhood, someone in your own. What you call your family, your nucleus of people that you know real well, and this young man was murdered needlessly by illegals. And my husband and I were actually down at Dale Hollow Lake in Kentucky, and our daughter called us just hysterical, and it just put a damper on our weekend. And we came back home the next morning because it just totally devastated us. And as the days passed, you know, when friends will talk about it, and we got together and said, hey, you know, we need to try to do something because, hey, it's now in our back doors. It's now here in our little area of Warren County where you don't think things like this is going to happen. So we got together and called some of our local and county state officials and called Warren County Sheriff. He came, our prosecutor, and several police chiefs in the area for our first initial meeting, and we found out exactly what we can and cannot do. And, you know, unfortunately, the news that we got, things, I'll tell you what, it's hard. You know what you want to do, but you can't just do it. You have to go. What we're having to do now, instead of going aiming at federal, we are starting here locally in our own area here in Warren County, and we're hoping to doing is going around to city council meetings, We've just now went to the FOP, Warren County FOP, Warren County Commissioners, and we are asking that for towns, for cities, villages, townships to adopt an ordinance making it illegal to rent and or hire an illegal alien, undocumented, and we want that, we want them to put some stiff penalties, like some high fines. And so far, we've been received very well. Warren County Commissioners have given us their written support, along with Warren County Sheriff, and Warren County Prosecutor's Office has also given us their support, not written but verbally. So right now, we're going around to each place, trying to gain support, and just seeing how we're received. We would like to see something eventually become statewide.
Well, you've probably been following the story in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, the mayor there.
Their video, and we play that video a lot. Mr. Barnhill makes a wonderful presentation. Hazleton news clip, he has played that at almost every meeting, and a lot of people just, I've noticed, will sit there with their mouths open. They just don't realize.
Well, he's certainly a stand-up kind of politician, isn't he?
Yes.
It certainly takes a lot of courage. Is it too much to talk about the circumstance of the crime when Mr. Barnhill's son was killed?
Well, no, actually, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Barnhill. He's sitting right here, and I will let you. I'll turn it over to him for just a little bit.
Thank you very much.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
First, let me offer my sympathies for what happened to you. A long time ago, I worked as a police officer, and I've been on the end of some of these cases once in a while, and it's a heart-wrenching experience. And I'm really inspired with what you folks have done to come back and do something about it.
Well, thank you for your kind thoughts. And as Judy said, you never think it's going to hit your doorstep, but certainly. Worst thing that can happen is when you answer the doorbell and you see a priest and a police officer out front, you know something is definitely wrong. Although we never imagined it would have been the circumstances that it was at the big.
Mm-hmm. Were you friends with the Laymans before? Or?
Yes, we have children that are I guess our peers, some of whom grew up in the same school system, and. It's an issue that goes across every boundary, demographical boundary, geographical boundary, and I think we're finding it brings people that perhaps weren't real close socially together.
Sure.
In cause, and that's what's brought us all together.
We all Fred. Know each other because this is a small area. It's a rural area, and everyone always, especially when your kids are in school, kind of know everyone.
Right. Mm-hmm. What's the state of the case now in terms of the prosecution?
Well, the Warren County prosecutor and the police agencies involved arrested detained eight individuals that evening that were identified by eyewitnesses on the scene as being involved in the incident. All of these individuals, we believe, are illegal. They were all Hispanic ethnic group. Actually lived within a mile of the facility where they found my son. They had 23 people in a house.
House.
My. Eight of which they detained because of certain restrictions placed on them by the federal government, the law that preempts local law. They were only able to hold two. Those two were held. One of the two had cocaine on him, and they held him for that reason. The other one was actually involved in a felony assault on a individual that was with my son, not actually held because of the murder or death of my son. So they held them, and then they did some more investigation, and they eventually came up with enough evidence, they feel, to charge them with complicity to murder. Again, in retrospect, there was a third individual there that was released who we believe now is the actual killer who had the knife. But he's out in the general population, you know, living his life.
Is that the gentleman whose picture you have on the website?
C.K. Torres is his name.
Right. And you think he's flown to where?
Well, it's a good question. There are not a lot of leads. You know, in these cases, they blend in. These groups are pretty savvy now. Their organizations are pretty savvy. They're not only bringing a lot of people in covertly, but they're keeping them under wraps so that they, you know, they don't get noticed. We believe Enrique is still in the country, but that's, you know, our way of thinking, a shot in the dark at this point. We're hopeful. I think the prosecutors are hopeful to try to turn the two that they have in custody to give him up. But right now they have not been doing much talking.
Did this happen inside the city of Mason?
This murder was the first murder in Mason since the year 2000. It was at a local establishment, the Mason Pub, which had a history of some violence there over the course of the last 20 years. The Mason police were aware of it, but naturally not any murders. But quite frankly, the folks that were detained were regular customers there, and were, you know, as far as we know, presented ID to get in the bar that was not legal ID.
Mm-hmm. Is Chief Ron Farrell still the chief there in Mason?
Yes, he is.
Dr. Farrell, actually. He was a student of mine and worked with me on the Law Enforcement Commission in Columbus when I did that in a former life from 86 to 1991. Mm-hmm. So the case is active, and they're in the process of, have they been to a grand jury then?
Yeah, the grand jury indicted the two several months ago.
Okay.
The trial date is set for May, of course, unless it gets delayed for any reason, but we expect to go to trial in May.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one will certainly be an attention getter for that community and even around the nation, won't it?
Well, we hope that one of my son's legacies is that he brings, again, this issue to light through the legal process as well as through our efforts. You know, the bottom line for us is that it doesn't happen again to someone, you know, in his situation or in any situation for that matter, because this was an incident that was not provoked by either of my son or his associate that was with him that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have taking the position early on that one of the problems with allowing our borders to be, you know, unsecured is that it not only allows anybody to come across, terrorists as well as well-meaning, you know, indigents to try to make a better life for themselves, but it also imports a culture that lives day to day. And, you know, we as U.S. citizens, most of us don't walk around with knives in our pocket to protect ourselves or guns. And that's what these folks are doing. They're walking around, and their response to confrontation is to pull out a knife or to pull out a gun or to gang up on you and you know, end your life, as it was in the case of my son. And that's really the very tragic thing about illegal immigration as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, it's who knows what the percentage is, but there are so many people come across, literally are looking for work, but of course they are violating the law when they cross the border illegally. But along with that comes that 10 or 15%, perhaps that high, that are really pretty hardened criminals. And I've been down on the border. Jim Pernison probably told you that, and wrote a paper about it and presented it at a national conference. And I was just absolutely shocked to see in Arizona how porous the border was. I mean, security was virtually non-existent. I mean, we were out at night, and we'd see one Border Patrol agent, you know, patrolling, you know, miles for either way. Now, that may have changed since we were down there two summers ago, but I couldn't believe it because I thought the border had some semblance of security, but it was really a three-strand barbed wire fence that was broken down in most places, and they just pour across at will. And then the illegal identity, I mean, they, you know, they're up in Tucson in literally a couple hours with fake IDs, and away they go. Did you happen to see the New York Times today? There was an article in there about two women. They were talking about illegal immigration, illegal immigrants stealing legal IDs. And they told the story of these two women, and I think the New York Times is sort of sympathetic to the woman who stole the ID. But when they did the swift meatpacking raids, they found, I think, a couple hundred people that were using actual IDs of American citizens.
And, well, we know that there's a black market for illegal identification, or in the case of legal identification, the theft of legal identification. It's ironic you say that, because one of the recent leads we have involves a young lady who is a boyfriend of an illegal who is apparently processing illegal identification, but she's a bartender. And what she does is she asks for people's ID when they walk in to order a drink, and uses that information, passes it on to her boyfriend, and from that point, illegal identification is processed. And, of course, sold. Money being made for that.
They said in this article that I've got it here in front of me, it says that 148 of 1,282 of the illegal immigrants from the Swift plant raids had illegal IDs. Substantial amount. And then apparently what some people are doing, which I found surprising, was that a lot of folks are selling their ID, knowing that two or three other people are using it. That's an oddity, isn't it?
I think anything that it's the law of supply and demand, if you want to use that economic term, but anything that has a value to someone, potential can be converted to somebody else's benefit, and especially with the loose control we have over identification. You know, again, one of the other things we are pushing for is a national identification program. You know, we think it has a lot of merit, but there are those that believe it's an invasion of privacy and an unfair restriction on the liberties of individuals.
Well, America was sort of built on the idea of being free, open, and anonymous, but I don't know if we can stay anonymous anymore and protect the nation. That's for sure.
I think Judy can tell you, having working in the law enforcement business and yourself, you know, the problem with these folks is that, first of all, local law enforcement doesn't have access to federal databases to see whether or not these folks that they're bringing in are illegal. Now, there are laws that allow local law enforcement to become trained by the ICE agents to do that, but and Warren County has one enforcement agency that's doing that as we speak. But, you know, we don't know who we're dealing with when we bring these people in. They have multiple identifications, if they have any at all. And, you know, Judy just reminded me of one of the early incidents here in Warren County where a Guatemalan actually came back to a construction work site and shot a construction superintendent as a result of him being fired. And when they brought him in, he showed the prosecutor six Social Security cards, none of which were his.
Well, they jump up to Tucson, and if they paid their money to a coyote, they were getting like four different sets of ID and three, four pieces of ID for each name. And then away they go, and of course they're, you know, partaking of government services and all sorts of things under more than one name, which is incredible, isn't it?
Well, and of course, you know, we do have the ability to detain these people, but only after they commit a crime, and that's sort of hypocritical, isn't it? I mean, our law enforcement is charged with responsibility of providing a safe haven in our communities, yet we can't react to these folks until they've actually committed a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that there's this concern about stereotyping or prototyping certain ethnic groups, but you know, it's a tough deal when somebody's been murdered and then that's the only time you can act. And even then, that's half, you know, many times are turned back into the general population, even though they've been previously deported.
You know, I have a discussion question on one of my online classes that I'm teaching right now called Contemporary Criminal Justice Issues and Trends, and it's about a case where the Salt Prairie, Wisconsin police were accused of racial profiling. And what happened is they stopped seven different cars containing four traffic violations, and they were all being driven by Mexicans. And when they checked their ID, the ID was suspicious or they didn't have any at all, so they went and checked into it. They called the Border Patrol, and the Border Patrol actually responded all seven times. And, of course, the ACLU came in and others and accused them of racial profiling, and my question to the students was, is this racial profiling? And almost to the person, we have students all over the United States, LA Sheriff's Department, and you know, everywhere. And, of course, all of them said it's not. I mean, you know, if somebody's suspicious and they can't produce an ID, then, you know, what do? You check. And this is way up in Salt Prairie, Wisconsin, which is pretty close up to the middle of nowhere. But, and I've talked to students in Middle Tennessee and Georgia and all over the place, and their communities are also. I mean, the people are just swarming in, some to find jobs. And, you know, America's the land of opportunity, both for legitimate work and for crime. If you want to be a criminal, this is a great place to be one.
Absolutely.
And curious about the Warren County Jail down there. What percentage, is it a small percentage of illegals that are actually in the jail?
Well, you know what, it isn't a big percentage. I don't have the actual numbers, but we do get speak. As a matter of fact, I think we got a couple in the last couple of days. The main ones that we get are driving with not having a driver's license. That's the big one. And, you know, most of the time, I don't even know if ICE has called for that. The only time that I think ICE has actually called is if it's a felony.
Right.
You know, we have someone there right now that, no, he doesn't have a Social Security number, but I don't think ICE is going to come and get him. He's wanted for, I mean, he's going to court for possession of drugs. I've noticed that. Have been sexual crimes or violent crimes, like assault and, like I said, murder. When I first started working there at Warren County, I'll never forget there was a gentleman that was an illegal alien, and I will never forget it. He stabbed a man in the chest in Mason, Ohio, 47 times.
Oh. I hope he's in jail.
Wasn't in the jail, but it was in Mason, and this man stabbed another person. This illegal stabbed another man 47 times. Oh, it was just horrible. But I'll never forget that. I was just a new person there, and when that guy was going through the process, I think he got 25 years in prison, 12 to 25, I think. I don't know if he's still in prison or if he's been deported.
Well, I think Sheriff Jones, just down the way there, he's trying to get that 287 authority, isn't he, so he can actually check their status on themselves when they're in the jail?
Our understanding is that his officers, his corrections officers, have been accepted into the program and may very well even be in training at this point.
Yeah, well, that seems to be becoming more popular, but you wonder why they would even have to do that.
That's right. Federal law preempts basically any other law of the land, and until the state politicians, I guess, or maybe the attorney general of the state can enter into some sort of agreement to allow cooperative law enforcement efforts, in other words, giving them the same authority as the federal agents have, then federal law will continue to preempt the state and local law.
Our sheriff in Warren County has just formally applied for the same thing, the 287. So hopefully he will push to have that done here in Warren County also.
You know, you've gotten a real-life perspective on this from the experiences that you've suffered, but isn't it amazing here in particularly the last year, how this has come more to the forefront? It's a hard issue to explain to people in, you know, 14-second sound bites on television or even 2 minutes, because there's so many complications to it. And of course, you probably saw we have another bill in the House that suggests, you know, legal worker program and that sort of thing. And what do you think needs to be done overall? And then I want to go back to your organization, but you folks have thought about it from a personal standpoint. What are 3 or 4 points that you think need to be done in federal legislation?
Well, as I said before, there needs to be a law created that creates a cooperative, collaborative law enforcement effort that goes from the southern border to the northern border, so that we have everyone's eyes and ears on the look. right now, federal agents are outmanned 5,000 to 1 if you listen to the current statistics. There's no way we can possibly do any kind of reasonable law enforcement. I don't think it's realistic to think we're going to be able to expel those that are in the country right now, but we need to require those that are here to assimilate. They need to be put on a path to citizenship. They need to be denied medical benefits unless they're a citizen. All the carrots that the illegals get here without having to produce reasonable identification need to be taken away until they assimilate and get their citizenship. Those are two solid points, and of course, I think until we can get control internally, we need to do a better job, a much better job securing the border. But we do need Mexico's cooperation to do that. We can't, I don't believe it's an effort on our end. I mean, there's just not enough fence that can stop it.
How long do you have to wait on that?
Right, and is it a political ploy? Is it a political football just to keep everybody diverted? Probably.
I'm sure you've read some of those accounts of what happens to you if you enter Mexico illegally, or what your rights are as a business person in Mexico who's not a Mexican citizen.
I understand we don't have any rights.
Yeah.
And that boggles my mind that they literally have more rights as an illegal than you and I do as a citizen, at least in terms of access to defense and access to medical benefits and the like.
Education.
And education, sure.
And their colleges are state college systems that give them in-state tuition, along with grants. And in fact, the woman in this article in the New York Times talks about she just wanted to stay long enough for her kids to graduate from high school and go to college.
We know someone that works for one of the colleges here in the greater Cincinnati area. It's a state college, and illegal aliens go to school for free.
Oh, my. Yeah, I imagine that's probably duplicated in a lot of places across the country. And frankly, I don't understand it. I don't think the American public gets this, and we're probably going to need a squad of politicians across the nation at the federal level to start talking about this, and I don't see it happening. There's nobody that's inspired about this idea.
I don't think anyone has the guts to do it. I think you got to have a little courage when you're talking about this.
What do you think?
I don't know if we have, or at least anyone right now, that has the courage to stand up, put this out in front, because I think it's a very serious issue.
Well, I think the costs, I think those are starting to dribble out now. People are starting to understand the financial cost of this, the hundreds of millions, billions of dollars over a period of time, and people haven't thought about that. And I hope that will be some force that will cause people to think more about it and elect people who do want to do something about it. Well, tell us about the organization. What was the inception for this idea? You did just sit down some evening and decide that you need Citizens for Legal Communities?
Why don't you talk about
the riot? Obviously the catalyst was the death of our son, and as Judy said, it hit home, and we all realized here locally that this is not a big city problem. It's no longer a big city problem only. It's spreading to the suburbs, and we need to get out in front of this problem right now. There were several people that were involved in getting local law enforcement and politicians together to discuss the issue. Our small group of a dozen or so have networked with a number of other groups in the state of Ohio to try to outreach the issues. I think we've been pretty successful through direct contact with those groups. We're an educational group. We're out there educating the public as to the issues, least of which is the issue of population explosion, by the way. This is one area I got into after doing a lot of research here. Costs, you mentioned costs before, they're going to rise exponentially if we don't cut off the flow of traffic into our country, because you're going to have 400 million people in here by the year 2050.
Exactly.
According to current statistics and flow across the border. 88% of which the newest population will be illegal population or other than the U.S. population. So well, where does that take us, and what does that, show for our kids and our children's kids?
What figure do you use when you estimate how many illegal immigrants are in the United States?
Well, we use what we call, I use the basic figure as a replacement value. The U.S. government figures they have a net deficit of population about 200,000 a year, which they've agreed to, you know, allow to be replaced through legal immigration programs. At this point, we're estimating over 2 million folks are coming across the border illegally. That's 10 times the replacement rate. So just take the next 44 years times 2 million or so people, and you've got 88 million people. That brings us very close to the 400 million figure that I quoted earlier.
People are shocked to find out that the number of illegals that are here now, even the conservative estimate, that it's more than all of several ethnic groups that have come to the United States since the history of the nation.
Correct.
As legally, and that is that's a stunning statistic. For people to hear, and some actually sort of doubt it. I point them to some data that shows them what they can look at. You have the link on your site for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, and they have a lot of good statistics on there. So that's a very useful site for people to sort of catch up on what's going on. Have you been able to work at the state level in terms of the legislature or anything? Have they been able to entertain?
Well, we have... We have asked, and several have appeared. State and local politicians have appeared on some of our forums. We don't feel as if there's a real bona fide movement heading in the direction we want to. And I think a lot of it has to do with courage, and a lot of it has to do with political, you know, interplay at the state level.
Frankly, I've heard almost nothing at the state level.
Now, there was one bill that we were on top of early on that was introduced by. A local politician here, Bill Seitz, House Bill 654, which we thought in part had some teeth to it. That's sort of been tabled at this point, although it's not completely gone. And we're gonna keep pushing in that area as we can. But we realized very, very early that the greatest effect that we can have is at the grassroots level to get people, more people, to force their local politicians, to carry the banner to the state and federal level. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's probably going to take a state referendum, you know, something that goes before the voters.
Yeah. Well, would you mind if we click on somebody else here? We might have a caller here that has a question for you folks, and then I have a few more questions, and I want to be sure that you're able to say what you want. Can you hold on just a second?
Sure.
Hello. We say this a lot on Blog Talk Radio. Who is it?
My name is J.C. Swinegruber out of Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm with the America First Party of Ohio. How's everyone doing tonight?
How are you doing, J.C.?
How are you, J.C.?
Hey, J.C.
I'm doing well. I'm glad to hear you guys on the radio tonight here on the Internet. I just wanted to touch base with you real quick and just say thank you very much for the efforts that you're putting forth. I'm out of Cincinnati, obviously, and it means a lot to a lot of us locally what you're doing. You've touched base with a lot of local politicians about what they can do locally to stem the tide of some of the illegal immigration. I know there's been a lot of concern, but, I just wanted to give you a heads up. But we think you're doing a great job. Please keep it up. And you did hit on a key point earlier, Ms. Lehman, when you were talking about this, Mr. Barnhill. It takes a lot of courage for politicians to stand up against something like this, especially when you see that they get a lot of contributions from business people in the area, not just here, but around the state, at the national level, who tend to hire a lot of illegal immigration or a lot of illegal immigrants from town to town. It is a bad problem, but I do applaud your courage for what you're doing.
I would imagine the America First Party has some people who are willing to stand up, correct?
Absolutely. We're kind of running across the same problem you have. You've talked to a lot of local politicians, even statewide politicians, about what needs to be done, about the problems that are out there and the number of illegal immigrants that are estimated at our state level, even in a very conservative estimate, and they lack the courage to do anything. We've done the same thing. We've sent out press releases to news organizations across the state, radio stations, and you don't really get a lot of concern or any kind of interest, really, about what's going on. one statistic that I wanted to bring up as well was that if you just take a look, if you're a parent and you have children in school, you pay taxes. 3 years ago, actually 2004, I did find on the state webpage for education that in 2004 the state of Ohio spent close to $50 million to educate the children of illegal immigrants. That's a lot of money to the taxpayers of Ohio. Now, I'm not cold-hearted. I don't want to see children not be educated, obviously, but that's a lot of money for folks that should be educated in another country that have really shown no interest in assimilating with our culture, which, you know, we're for immigration, but legal immigration. You know, so it's a tough issue. And when, you know, when you come across something that happened with your family, Mr. Barnhill, it's a tragedy. It's happening all over the country, and local politicians don't want to really pay attention to it because there are too many people locally hiring illegal immigrants and not reporting it and making money, and they turn around and make contributions to local politicians and national politicians as well. It's not hard to find out who's making contributions. All you have to do is go to opensecrets.org, and who makes political contributions is right there.
Mm-hmm. That website.
Yeah, opensecrets.org.
You know, one thing, talking about with our local politicians, we met with one commissioners, I think it was 2 weeks ago. I thought we were received very well, and it was unanimous by the Warren County commissioners that they are going to lobby at the state level. Her name was Pat South, and she said they are going to help us get the ball rolling. I mean, they were very compassionate, and we were so well received by them.
Right, and I'm aware who Pat South is. You know, local politicians like that are few and far between.
Exactly, and Mike is with it, and Mr. Dave Young, all three of them, they just gave us their full support, they said they will lobby for us and with us on the state level.
Okay. Well, I will throw this out here as well. We in the America First Party of Ohio are incredibly passionate about this issue. Please, by all means, consider us in your camp. Like I said, we're for legal immigration, but responsible immigration and not illegal immigration. And the fact that we have so many millions of illegals coming across our border every year, we've had more people killed by illegals, and we've lost troops in Iraq. That almost, if you wanted to redefine that, you could say that, hey, our border is a war zone.
Exactly.
And people are getting shot at on a daily basis by illegals coming across, or paramilitary that are hired out by drug smuggling gangs. And it was maybe 2 weeks ago, I think, a couple of counties up from us here in Hamilton County. Trumbull County or something like that, a truck was pulled over. I don't know if it was going toward Indiana or coming from Indiana going through Ohio, but the truck was pulled over by the police officers there, and they found 180 pounds, I want to say, of cocaine, which had about $8 million in street value. It seems like I read something like that. It was pretty significant bust. And the question is, how many illegals or illegal gangs did they stop through in Ohio and drop drugs off to sell to children in our hometowns?
Exactly.
How many families get ruined by this? One of the people in the truck was a Hispanic from L.A. The other one was an illegal immigrant. Should we be surprised? So when we see all the drug issues, the crime issues, through Ohio, how much of this really is attributed to illegal immigration? The press won't tell you this. Local politicians won't tell you this. Even here in Cincinnati, one of our council members by the name of Cranley was on the radio a few months back and refused to even tell one of the radio hosts how many illegals he thought was in the area of Cincinnati. If we can't get the cooperation from our politicians, how are we to protect ourselves or our families?
You know, sometimes I think on the numbers issue, I think it was the new math years ago that they can't comprehend what these numbers mean and the significance in terms of cost to the country and local and state communities. But
you're right. Hey, I've taken up enough of your time here tonight. I just want to say, hey, thanks again for your efforts. There are a lot of citizens out here that do appreciate it, so please, by all means, keep up what you're doing.
Thanks for coming on, and maybe we can have you on again, I hope. Okay.
Hey, anytime. You got my number, so you know, just feel free to give me a buzz. Hey, you
all
guys
right.
Take care.
Thank you.
Good night.
What do you folks have a sort of a structured education program that you present, maybe at high schools or colleges or something like that?
We haven't gone to that level yet. Right now, we are just starting here. You know, like I said, in the last couple of months, we've been going to city council meetings. We went to the commissioners, like I said. We plan on going to township meetings, fraternal organizations, and if schools and colleges will let us speak, we'll do that too.
Well, good. I think that would be a great idea because college students today are probably a lot more receptive to listening to things like this than they would have been, 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, I had there's a student from Miami University that contacted me a couple of weeks ago. She is meeting me tomorrow, actually. I'm going to give her some things to hand out, and she is wanting, this is a project for her, that she has in one of her classes, and she has taken on our group, and she wants to help. And she is going to get a petition signed, getting support, and she's wanting to do some stuff to help us out. So I appreciate that. It's nice to see someone, a young person, 18 years old, that wants to do that. Because a lot of times you get a lot of these young kids, and they get a little sympathetic, I think, to something like this. You know, like they're people too, and. You know, why can't we just let them be here? So I really appreciate this girl coming forward. And, you know, we met at Springboro City Council about a month ago, and I had a gentleman come up to me, and he also met the Barnhills, and he told me that he is with a group of business people from Montgomery and Hamilton County. He said they're about 400 or 500 strong, and he said they support our group 100%. But a lot of the people are afraid to come forward because they are afraid of retaliation. They are legal in this country. They are Hispanic, but they are legal citizens now, and they support us. But they have.
Still there?
Yes. Now, Mr. Barnhill puts on a wonderful presentation, and it's very structured and very informative, and he and his wife have these wonderful handouts that, to the panel, whoever he speaks to, with information. So everything he says, he has documentation to support everything that he presents.
You know, a fairly good audience for you would be these criminal justice programs all over the state of Ohio and, of course, across the nation. There are more than 1,600 degree programs in criminal justice where these folks are majoring and trying to graduate so they can work in police courts and the corrections field. So some of these programs are literally, in fact, a woman that was on my show last week, I don't know if you happened to listen to any of that, but she was a specialist on policing in Bahrain. And she'd been over there like 10 months and studying women and policing over there. The John Jay College of Criminal Justice literally has 7,000 or 8,000 students in New York City that are majoring in criminal justice. We probably have 400 at our university. Cincinnati would easily have 400 or 500, 600. So those would be very willing audiences to listen to the story for sure because it's part of their education. They need to know about that. Is there an opportunity, you folks are all working full time, so you probably don't have a lot of evenings and daytime to do that, do you?
No, we're pretty selective with, we're selective and because of our schedules, but we're trying to do one or two major presentations to local township councils and town meetings a month. and perhaps a little bit more frequently as we go on. But, you know, time is limited for sure.
It would be great if you could, I'm sure you've thought of this, if you could get maybe one of these college media groups to make some type of film. I mean, that would be outstanding. Then you could distribute it that way also.
Yeah, I think we have to take advantage of the new technology, the new media technology for sure, and we're getting into that.
But what's in the future? What do you see a month out or 2 months out in terms of what you folks are doing? And be sure to let me know anything else you want to say here tonight. We're running a little short on time, and what do you got coming up?
Well, right now, one thing that we are going to do is follow up with Mason City Council, because I don't think we've followed up with them yet, and with Springboro. We need to do some follow-up. The next, probably the next place that we're wanting to get in is in our own area is Lebanon City Council. They have stated to us that they will give us 3 minutes, and for them that's not long enough, because by the time I say hello and sit down, it's going to be 3 minutes, and as you can tell, I'm a big talker. I'll talk as long as you let me.
That's great. You're made for radio. You
have your own 3 minutes. So that's us. And then probably after Lebanon, we will probably be going to some of the smaller villages like Waynesville, Franklin, Carlisle.
Let me mention something else, and I would certainly volunteer the service here if you would be interested in doing it. If you would have a group of people, and keep in mind that this show can go to unlimited numbers of listeners, if you would want to use the show some night where I just sort of open up and let you go, you could do a nice recorded presentation and have as many people you want that you could notify ahead of time that wanted to listen to your presentation, and then the whole thing would be archived, and you could download that and use that as you know, an audio tape or an audio CD that you could distribute.
Sure, we certainly appreciate the offer, and would be more than happy to work with you on that.
Well, we'll talk about that here in the near future, and I think that would be a way to help get the word out.
That would be wonderful.
And I think you know you're on to something, and I again, it's horrifying what happened to you folks, you know, I certainly pray that things will work out in that regard and that your healing is taking place. But to bounce back from something like that and start getting the word out, and something that is so important to the American people, and they're just not getting the message. So we're thankful for folks like you that are actually doing this. So anything else you want to say tonight in terms of closing?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for inviting us to come on tonight and present ourselves to you. Very thankful, and also thank you again for offering for us to do a presentation on your show in the future. You've been very gracious and a wonderful host, and maybe someday we'll get to meet.
Well, I hope we do, and I'm looking forward to that night when you come back on the show and take over the whole thing.
Love it. Well, now, do you have my number now that I left on your voicemail, I hope.
Certainly do.
Good deal.
I do. Thank you very much, Mr. Barnhill, Mrs. Barnhill, and the best of luck for you in the future here.
Thank you very much for your thoughts.
Good night, folks.
Good night.
Folks, that wraps up another evening. Audrey, as usual, is signaling that the showtime is over, so we'll be saying good night, and we look forward to seeing you next week, and you can look on the website and see what our topic will be for next week. Thanks again, and everybody stay safe, and we'll be seeing each other again. While it's just like you.
always do, till the blue skies like the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Meet again.